Welcome to Creative on Purpose Live, a show about show featuring conversations with insightful difference makers to inspire a life of greater intention and impact. I'm your host, Scott Perry, Chief Difference Maker at Creative on Purpose. If you're ready to get clearer about and closer to what you really want in life and business, visit creativeonpurpose.com. I am thrilled to have my friend Rochelle here today. Rochelle, please tell our viewers who you are, what you're up to these days, where can people go to learn more about you and the difference you're making?
Gosh, well, we've only got 30 minutes. hey, everybody. My name is Rochelle Shaw. And for many years, I was the only female African-American public utility owner in the nation. I built my first business from 300,000 to 36 million. I lost it all after 9/11. And then I rebuilt back my million-dollar business in about 5 months. Now I help really amazing entrepreneurs, six-figure entrepreneurs, get to seven by using strategic partnerships, and written a couple of books all about building businesses. I did that all while having a little who is now a high school senior. Yes. And so now it's just time to keep serving and have the best life ever.
You have a great story, Rochelle. And I'm always really curious about how people got to be doing the thing that they're doing now. I can't, like, my guess is that 9-year-old Rochelle wasn't in the third grade saying, you know what I want to be when I grow up? I want to be the first African-American utility owner that becomes a million. So, like, how did you get from, how did you get to where you are right now? How did you get to that point where you were the owner of a public utility?
Yeah, well, 12-year-old Rochelle did say, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire one day. And I was reminded of that by my favorite aunt who told me, yeah, you know, you told me back then. I'm like, really? Because I was shocked too, right? But 9-year-old Rochelle was in an amazing environment. I have to thank my parents for putting me in an environment where all of my friends' parents were business owners. And they all were from dentists to architects, realtors. My father was an industrial realtor. And so I was used to entrepreneurship. I use that as my excuse of not being a rule follower, right? Because I'm like, wait, what? Like, why are we doing that? You need to explain this to me. So little Rochelle was definitely that, always asking, very inquisitive. Public schools were different back then, so that they allowed for those great, great things. But from that, you know, it all is, you know, I met this guy. So every story with me is I met this guy. So I met this guy who said, oh my gosh, you know, you'd be great to work for us. And I'm like, well, everybody thinks so, because I've always been this boisterous, this kind of force of nature that people would, when I come in the room, they pretty much go, oh, Rochelle's here, or Rochelle's here, kind of thing. So I'm ready for that. So I met this guy who said, you know, you'd be great working at the phone company. And I'm like, whatever, really? Okay. I'm an entrepreneur. Right? And he goes, no, like, for real, this is a small local telephone company here in Las Vegas, and we need people like you. And so at the time, I was dating three men in three different states. As it's highly reported in USA Today, they always take that story, which is always fun. And I had this high phone bill, and I said, okay, let's try it for a while. And the first month, you know, my phone bill went from $300 to $59. Second month, it went to $49. And I said, okay, I'm hooked. What do I need to do? So I became a salesperson for them. I was promoted 4 times in 5 years, became executive vice president. And my boss was looking for a way out. I read this book called Why Do All the White Guys Get to Have All the Fun by Reginald L. Lewis. And on a plane where I was going to speak at an event about all of the success I was having. So here I am, 27, saying, maybe I can buy it. So I went to my boss and I was like, hey, what if I bought it from you? And he started laughing. And then he went, well, wait, what? Like, are you serious? And I go, yeah. You know. And then he went through all this thing. Well, you're a woman, you know, you're black, you can get money. So yeah, let's send you over to the SBA, see if we can get some money. I had all the four C's that I needed. You know, I had the credit, I had the background, I had everything except for the collateral. I had this little tiny house. I didn't have a real big house. And they said no. And they told me that I would not be able to compete with AT&T. And so I was like, oh, okay. So we had to work out something different. And we did a leverage buyout and I bought the assets and he went away with all of his debt, which was much better for me. But I got to be, at that point, the only female African-American public utility owner in the nation. So it wasn't about being in the telephone business or even owning a phone company. It was more about, I wanted to be an owner. I love being in charge. And especially 27, 28-year-old Rochelle really, really loved telling people what to do.
That's amazing. It's interesting. I mean, just a little synchronicity. My father worked for AT&T all of his adult life after he got out of the Army. So I have a little bit of a sense of at least the competition. you know, back in those days, it was called Ma Bell because it really was the only game in town. So, sure. But, you know, what's interesting to me about what you just shared is it sounds like you had a very clear sense of who you were and what game you wanted to play from a fairly young age. And that, while that might be typical for most entrepreneurs, it's not typical across the pop, you know, the average population. So for anyone that's watching that, that is looking to, like, maybe I want to start my own business, get my own kind of thing going. What would you tell someone that doesn't have that kind of intuitive, instinctual set of skills or resources? What are the things that you leveraged that helped you very easily move through this journey into becoming an entrepreneur and an owner of a public utility?
Oh, well, let's be honest, you know, it was not easy, right? So even moving into it, all of the skills that I had developed from working, from selling, to building the company, I did it kind of with a parachute, right? And so one of the things I always tell people is it's easy to be fearless with other people's money, right? So it was really easy when it wasn't my money on the line. And it was easy to build this company without having to worry about how I was going to fund my retirement, my kids' college, any of those things. So the question that you asked me is if you are thinking about being an entrepreneur, I would definitely say the number one skill that you need to know how to do is sell. You need to know how to convey what you do and sell it in a way that people understand. I learned very, very quickly at the telephone business that it wasn't about people's how much they were paying. They really wanted to know, like, that they weren't overpaying, right? They felt that without a choice and with only having Ma Bell, which I came up right before diversity, right? Before they did divestiture and made it no longer a monopoly. So that I was there right when it happened. And then when it happened, it was like, okay, let's get after it. And so most people just felt like they were being snookered, which was the truth, right? They were being snookered. They were overpaying for a lot of the stuff. I don't know if you remember, but, you know, my gray hair kind of tells it all is, hey, you know, we had to wait till Sunday to call our grandma.
Yeah.
We had to wait till after 7 o'clock to call. Rates fluctuated based on time of day, based on distance. One of the things that I was able to pioneer in this industry is flat rate billing, that's what they have now. They just say, hey, you can do unlimited, call whoever you want and you'll be great. And how I even came up with that was solving a problem. I didn't want to have to pay for a new billing system. The billing system was $250,000. I didn't have the $250,000. So I was like, okay, how can we do this? How about we just have a flat rate? Everything's the same, doesn't matter. And I know exactly how much I'm going to make every single month. then I didn't have to worry about my revenue fluctuating, right? It worked. Who knew it would take off the way that it did? And even after, you know, running the business and what I truly help people with now, right, is number one, like, let's get comfortable with promoting what you do and talking about what you do so that people line up to talk to you. And then number two, making sure that you are servicing them in a way that really takes care of what they need, right? So one of our biggest features that set us apart from everybody was the fact that we controlled the switch. So when you dialed long distance, we had another little beep that came up and it would allow you to customize your bill. So we went to every law firm that we could find and said, hey, are you having problems billing your clients for the time that you're on the phone? How are you doing that? Most of them were doing it manually, right? Mm-hmm. So we said, how about if we give you 2-digit codes and you assign them to each of your clients? And then once your bill comes in, you can look at the bill and it breaks it all down so that you know exactly how much Mrs. Lewis's call cost, right? And how much time that you can bill her. And at that point, it just went bananas, just bananas. Like every law firm went absolutely, how can we do this, right? But that was just figuring out what exactly they want. And that would be the second thing that I would just make sure that you can focus on is figuring out exactly what your customer wants.
Yeah, well, I love that you began with, you know, you have to be good at selling things, but you didn't like, you're not talking about like how to trick people out of their money or how to create a no-brainer offer. It was like, basically, be a really good human being that is trying to serve the needs of other human beings. Yeah. And the other thing that I heard in your response that I think is really essential is to leverage our human capacity for creativity, especially creativity around solving problems. Like you solved your own problem first, and then you immediately turned to solve other people's problems. And I think, you know, basically there doesn't have to necessarily, like, I think we get hung up on the idea of, oh, an entrepreneur means I have to become a business person. This means I have to like adopt this professional persona and do all this. And it's like, no, there should not be any separation between your personal life and your professional life. You should be showing up as the best Rochelle, Scott, whoever that you can be in every given situation and leveraging that situation to become a little bit of a better person so that you can show up the next time even better. So I love the just kind of fundamental, like, let's just focus on the human element, the human to human connection.
True. And, you know, I think here's where people get mixed up too about this professional, right? I believe that the definition of professional means that I am going to do exactly what I said I was going to do when I said I was going to do, right? I'm just going to deliver the results that I told you that I would. That's professional, not how you dress, you know, because I'm a sweatshirt, t-shirt person all the time, flip-flops. Yeah, come on. I lived in Las Vegas for 30 years and back in California now. I am a flip-flop person. So if you expect me to be all fancy and in a suit that doesn't fit, that's not me. That's not me. And you know, it drove my mother bananas. Right? She would just be like, oh my gosh, my kid, what is this? What is this? You know, you don't look like, I know, I don't want to look like them. Right. So yes, I have always been a rebel. I've always been a, why do I have to? If you can prove to me that me dressing a certain way is going to make me more money, then I might, but sometimes it's not about making more money for me, right? So even my boss at the telephone company bought my first suit. Like he sent me to, well, he didn't, not my first one. Okay, let's tell the lie straight. Okay. He was the one who said, all right, Rochelle, we've got this big meeting. You cannot, here, gave me his credit card. I went to Macy's. I got this little suit that was so uncomfortable. And I just sat there the whole time and looked at him. You know, we were in a big lawsuit. And so he wanted to have it a certain way. But at the end of the day, you know, if you see me on the street, you see me looking pretty much just like this.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I my wife fusses at me sometimes because I'll show up on a client call in my sweatshirt, you know, my pajama bottoms are still on, right? And but you know what I've noticed is like my clients, then it's a signal like you can just show up because we're not here to impress each other with our wardrobe. We're here to get to work and make some change for the better happen. So
yes.
I totally agree. I think we get too hung up. I call it the identity trap. Sometimes we have like these ideas of what a successful person looks like or whatever, you know, like identity is really important. Obviously, you know, if you're identifying in a certain way, especially around an identity that has historically been mistreated, identity is really important. But if you cling too hard, too tightly to any kind of identity, you're putting yourself in a box that, and it's really hard to navigate in a way that's going to get you what you want with less risk, with less effort, in less time. So I really appreciate that. I wanted to skip ahead a little bit to, you know, you overcame some obstacles to buy this business and then run a very successful business. But you said that you also ran into some difficulties right around or after 9/11. And if you don't mind sharing a little bit about that, I think it's always interesting for people to hear, how a successful person deals with adversity, especially it sounds like, a pretty significant challenge.
Sure. And really young. Right. So, it was rough. It was really rough. You know, 9/11, I remember the morning. I'll back up. So one of the things that we do every September is Labor Day. My grandmother would have a picnic and I would always go to the picnic in Southern California. Right. And so my grandmother had 10 children. So we would all get together. I have a huge family, 156 cousins. My mother is the youngest girl, and I'm the youngest girl of the youngest girl. And then I had a youngest girl. So now it's just great. So I really wanted to go, but I knew I needed to send the bills out. And I decided not to because I wanted to go. Yeah. You know, hindsight is 2020. So I decided to go to the event. Had a great time. Yay, that's great. And then we came back and we got the bills done and we sent them out. Then I remembered 6:30 in the morning and the news is on and I could see the planes run into the World Trade Center. And you go, wait a minute. Did I just see what I thought I saw? Like, yeah. It's just so unbelievable. Kind of like COVID, right? Like when things shut down, like you just go, who would have thought this could ever happen to this business? So one of the things about the long distance telephone game is when your phone is activated, the call records start generating. It takes the host company from the switch 30 days to get those calls to me. It takes me 30 days to process those calls. And then it takes another 30 days to get the bill to you. Okay. Then you've got 15 to 30 days to pay it. So when we start adding those up, my exposure is 4 months, 120 days that I'm out before I'm getting a payment. So now in the beginning, you know, you just have to hold your breath for the 4 months and then the bills start coming in and then you're always paying, you know, in arrears. Until there's a hiccup. So overnight, I owed $4 million. And you go, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. What am I going to do? And it was just, there was no recovering. There was just no recovering. So fast forward to, we literally just shut it down one day. And didn't come back to work. And I was at home sitting there thinking, what in the world am I going to do? And how do I rebuild this thing? maybe I'll just go get a job because maybe I'm not good at it. You know, I was a history major at UCLA. I decided I would go back to school and go to UNLV and get my MBA and kind of figure this thing out. So fast forward to, I'm looking for a job. I created a resume and I was reading that it takes 1 month for every $10,000 of revenue to find a new job. So I said, well, of income, right? Of your salary. So I was looking for a salary of $200,000 because that's how much I was making before I bought the company. And I'm like, well, that's 20 months. I don't have 20 months. I also have this baby. So, you know, what am I going to do? Well, you know, the baby wasn't, I was trying and in a new relationship and really decided that, okay, now maybe I should try to start this up again. So I went to my friends that I had made in the industry. Hey, can you give me a carrier bill? Hey, you know, can you do this? Can you do this? Can I go inside of your office? And I formed all of these partnerships that allowed me to restart. And I called my friends who used to work for me and I was like, hey, I don't have any money, but if you're willing to go at this thing with me, you know, let's see if we can do it again. And I just put my head down and did everything I knew how to do. And here we are back in September again, my favorite month. And I looked and I asked Quicken, which is not QuickBooks, right? It was the one before that, right? Just the general one. Tell me how many deposits how much I had deposited in the bank this year. And I had deposited $947,000 within 5 months of restarting. And I was like, oh my goodness. Okay. All right. I think I did it. I think I did it. But truthfully, it was, I felt like I had no choice. It wasn't a, ooh, I'm ready to do this again. No, I was scared as hell. I'm still traumatized, you know, by it. I still live very, very frugally because of it. I still drive a 12-year-old car because of it, you know. My daughter, even next year, is going to go to a community college because of it, right? Because I want her to have enough money to finish and to do the things she needs to do. I still went back to UNLV. I still was in business courses. Funny story is I bought this other business out of bankruptcy called WorksZ.com. WorksZ.com, right? And they had 55,000 subscribers to their newsletter. And in this business, it was a content business. It was, you know, my first trek in online marketing. I was like, okay, well, I'll take those 55,000 and sell them DSL service, right? Fast internet. This will be easy. It'll be fun. This is perfect. Yeah, that's not what happened. However, while I was at UNLV, I'm in this business class and I get the book, the textbook, and I flip to the pages of the internet because it's 2007, 2006. And I'm looking and they said the best place to find to put your business online is a website called WorkZ.com. I'm like, wait a minute, I own this. So here in the textbook is a company that I own and I'm paying them to. Okay, so I dropped out of school at that point and said, think I kind of know what I'm doing. And just went back to the library and kept reading more and more books and kept testing and kept trying. And yeah, here we are 30 years later.
Oh, really incredible. I love the just the story. I mean, at the heart of that is resilience, but also like that reminder, like it, black swan events happen. We've all experienced one, you know, very, very recently. And you can, you know, of course you can build systems and you can do everything that you can do, but you know, sometimes black swans just do what black swans do. And they take things into directions that you can't possibly imagine. So that part is really powerful that you were able to come back and start over. but I also love the, oh, you know, like all this book learning, knowledge gathering I'm doing, isn't that actually helping me? Like, I know enough. And I think that's a really important thing for anyone that's considering, you know, freelancing, starting a business, whatever. You actually, if you just leverage the assets that you already have in terms of knowledge, experience, personality, attitude, work ethic, and all that, you can build something as you go, and it will be much bigger, stronger, and better, and reflective of you and the unique difference that only you can make in the world than anything that's going to come from trying to model something on a template that you learned, you know, in an MBA program. So super, super powerful. As we're coming to the end of our time together, Rochelle, I always like to kind of close with, you know, for the people that are tuning in, they are people that are creatives, freelancers, solopreneurs, and they are interested in you know, doing something akin to what you have done. What final piece of advice, is there a particular quote, a practice, or just a piece of advice that you would give them to help them take the next step that they need to take in their journey to become thriving difference makers?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, we always say, you know, find somebody that's creative like you, you know. So find a guy like Scott that can help you navigate this thing. My best friend in the world is she was a performer all over the world, and I danced for 12 years and always thought that I would be in Hollywood, right? And so the one thing that she taught me is she goes, you know, Rochelle, it's never the steps that you learn that makes dance beautiful, right? It is your movement in between the steps that makes the real beauty. And that's the same thing with business. It's not the tool, the tactic, the strategy. It's not that. It's how you move between them effortlessly so that you take your client from prospect to paying you through those steps so that they understand why they're there and they can move effortlessly through it with you. So that's what I just love. That's what I loved from being around creative people. I love her with all my heart, right? And I love to see her dance. Like when I watch, even her feet are just beautiful. And it just is amazing to me, just the rhythm, the pace, you know, sometimes she's behind the beat and sometimes she's ahead of the beat to make the dance just beautiful. And I think that that's what happens with this business thing when it's right, right? It becomes beautiful, and it is our ability to recover. You know, I would watch her teach her class because my daughter danced with her. And Devin would be falling out of a turn, and she would say, ah, here's your problem, is that you haven't leaned forward on that back foot, right? Lean forward while you take that turn, and instantly she would complete the turn and land perfectly. Yeah. And that's what someone like you, like Scott, does for you creatives out there, is that he knows where it's going to break. Mm-hmm. Right. He knows where you're going to have challenges, and getting someone who understands that process for you is where you truly win. And so that's pretty much just what I just tell people all the time is, you know, who's for me, you know, who's not is not. Like, I am polarizing. Either you love Rochelle, right? Or you don't. And that's okay. And I love that fact, because now I know where to kind of put you in my audience, if I put you up front or if I put you in the back.
Really, really love that, and appreciate all the kind words. Yes, learning how to see around the corner is really, really important, and you can't do that out of the gate. So always good to find a friend, mentor, coach, what have you. Rochelle, this has been really, really a super profound wisdom bombs being dropped here, and just love to learn more about your story. Every time we collide, I feel like I get another piece that just makes me admire you and be inspired by you all the more. So thank you very much for your time. I want to thank everyone that's tuning in for your time. We appreciate the gift of your time and attention. And we hope that you will take some of the things that Rochelle has said and apply them to your journey to become make a better living while you make a bigger difference in whatever difference that you're trying to make in the world. If you are tuning in on a live broadcast and you want to leave a like, a comment, a question, always happy to get back to you wherever you're watching this broadcast. If you're listening as a podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps more of the right people collide with these conversations. And now take the insight and inspiration that Rochelle has just shared and go fly a little bit higher in whatever endeavor you seek to succeed in. And Rochelle, thank you so much for the gift of your time and attention today.
Oh, thank you.